Our next speaker is Gary Knox, and he'll be talking to us about accelerated ex situ conservation of threatened magnolia species using commercial nursery propagation and production methods.
Thanks, Matt. Good morning, everyone. This is not fancy science by any means, but it is an example where you can take conventional horticultural production and propagation methods and really make an impact with an endangered species in a very short period of time. Okay. So in the world of magnolias, the range of magnolias has been broadened recently by discoveries of new magnolia species in Central America, the Caribbean, and South America, even as we continue to make new discoveries of magnolias in Asia. As a result of this, in 2016, the IUCN revised the red list of Magnoliaceae and tallied up over 300 species of magnolia. Now, shockingly, 48% of all the species were considered threatened in one form or another, and an additional 30% were data deficient, so they really couldn't judge the status of their conservation assessment. So this really means that, obviously, conservation both in situ and ex situ are going to be very important for these magnolia species. And again, shockingly, only 43% of the endangered magnolia species are present in botanical gardens. One of the data-deficient magnolia species is Magnolia sphaerantha, which is found in a small part of the province of Yunnan in southwestern China, and it's listed as data-deficient by the Red List IUCN group and vulnerable by the China Red List. And it's really suffering from the typical things of deforestation, encroachment by human development, and so forth in that area. It is a evergreen, broadleaf evergreen tree found in montane forests. It has attractive 4-inch white flowers with 9 to 12 tepals that flowers in March to May with fruits following thereafter. Until our movement of the species, it was found in just a few botanical gardens in China and was really not found outside of China at all in any conservation resources. So in 2013, I happened to be in China with a grant group consisting of, on the left, Yan Chen from Louisiana State University, Meng Meng Gu from Texas A&M, and then Dave Creech from Stephen F. Austin University. And we traveled to visit Kunming Botanical Garden, which has a wonderful collection of magnolia species. And there we found a grove of mature Magnolia sphaerantha that happened to be in fruit at the time. And if you look closely on the right, you'll see a little red spot right there, which represents the fruit. Of course, in the trees, they were too high to access, but there were some on the ground that had fallen, and I convinced my colleagues to scrounge around in the leaves and duff to try to pick up a few of the fruits, which we did successfully, and I managed to clean and extract 66 seeds. Now, it also so happened that Richard Olson was visiting Kunming Botanical Garden at the time. He is the director of the National Arboretum, so I passed the seeds on to him, knowing that he would have a much more direct legal way to bring them into the U.S. than I would. So it was very fortuitous that Richard happened to be there at the time. So we made this collection in November of 2013, and true to his word, in December, he actually shipped the seeds to me. We did not know what sort of stratification requirements the seeds might need, but we did leave some unstratified, placed others in the refrigerator, and over the course of the next 3 months, we planted the seeds in a conventional seed substrate with bottom heat and mist irrigation. And over the course of the next few months, a total of 20 seeds or 30% germination occurred. And again, nothing special here. But what we did is, as the seeds reached a size large enough for transplanting, we would move them into a 4-inch container. And then from here on, we treated them as any other nursery crop, using a conventional substrate of 80% pine bark, 10% peat, and 10% sludge, and then, you know, conventional slow-release fertilizer, overhead irrigation, yada yada, you know, the typical sort of thing. But by keeping a close eye on the plants, as soon as each cohort grew to fill out their container with the root system, we upshifted them to the next larger size container. So we went from a 4-inch to a number 1, and then to a number 3, by July of 2014. As you can see, at that point, the initial cohort was a meter or more in height. And so that was relatively fast and good to see. At that point, they started developing axillary branches that were large enough to take as cuttings without destroying the form of the whole plant entirely. And so we began a process of taking cuttings and treating them with a range of rooting hormones. We didn't want to treat this as a research experiment for fear of losing any, but we did try a range of rooting hormones and eventually settled on Hormex number 8 as the best one. We found that the cuttings would root in 9 to 11 weeks, and between the succeeding crops of seedlings as well as regrowth from the oldest crop of seedlings, we were able to take cuttings on a monthly basis, again, rooting in 9 to 11 weeks and getting 25 to 100% rooting, depending on the date, clone, and rooting hormone. So what this means is that from the time of seed collection in November 2013 to December of 2014, just a little over a year, we went from zero plants to 115 seedlings and rooted cuttings that were available for distribution. And moreover, as you can see on the right-hand side, they were good-sized plants that we could distribute to botanical gardens and other institutions. And so in the next 6 to 9 months, we did distribute them to 32 sites in, I think it was 12 states and one Canadian province, mostly within hardiness zones 7 to 9 or 10 or so, because that was the presumed range of hardiness for the species that we knew about. And moreover, we were able to send multiple plants to these sites so that it wasn't just a single plant that these places received. So this is basically it. You know, just by using conventional nursery production and propagation, we're able to rapidly push the growth of the plants, rapidly propagate rooted cuttings from the plants, and end up with a large number of plants that we're able to distribute, all within basically a one-year time frame. And although seeds are oftentimes the preferred way of distributing a new species, if you don't have the number of seeds available, and if the plant is amenable to these sorts of production regimes, it really offers advantages of producing more plants through these asexual propagation to make more plants available, to be able to distribute more plants per site, and even to distribute multiple clones per site to broaden the genetic diversity. So this, is in a nutshell, is how we were able to really rapidly increase the number of botanical gardens worldwide, or at least in North America, to have this rare species from China, and thus help to conserve it ex situ. Very quick, very brief, but if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Mary? Yeah. The Plant Collections Network, which is an organization by USDA and the American Public Gardens Association, is a means of creating national gardens or national collections of plants. And there is a multi-site national magnolia group consisting of 17 gardens across North America and Canada. And so we first put the word out to that official group of the official magnolia collection group as to whether they were willing to accept samples of the species. And then beyond that, it was I kind of browbeat people into accepting it. And usually it wasn't hard to do, so particularly in Florida.
Yes. So what about the next step, Gary, of getting it out in the trade? Is it a magnolia that's worthy of landscape planting, being sold at garden centers, being used by landscapers?
That remains to be seen. I think my seedlings, the oldest ones I have not flowered yet, for example, so we don't have any actual in-hand flowers to show, and that is the best-looking plant out of about 20 that I have. So I think it's more for conservation. There are some other species that are really valuable for breeding and possible nursery production, more so than this one. Ryan?
Has anybody gone back to recollect to get a broader genetic base?
Good question. You know, the Kunming Botanical Garden did have records where they collected them from a particular mountain in Yunnan province, and I don't know whether they or anybody else would be able to go back and look for, you know, a broader range of variation. Yeah.
Has the number of endangered magnolias,
That'd be a good thing to investigate. And that's something we could do with the PCN Magnolia Group, is to track the number of... that's something we ought to do. That's a good idea. Thank you. Believe me, it's difficult enough to ship plants within the United States with all the permitting that's needed. So, no, I have not ventured forth to do it out of the country yet, other than Canada. And to be perfectly honest, they came down into the U.S. and picked up the plant. So,
thank you, Gary.